Will these recordings be available for other people?
Yes. Yeah, I wanted to get the recording started because I'm actually on my old computer right now. It's a little slow. So, we're going to share the recording in a few days, probably early next week, also with some notes from the call so that people can use it in their, you know, share it with people in their groups and such.
Hey, it's
Hi.
I'm
sorry, do you want to introduce yourself?
I'm sorry?
Oh, I just said, I think if you just joined the call, you're welcome to introduce yourself and just say where you're calling from.
Yeah, this is Margie. I'm from Atlanta.
Oh, great. Thanks, Margie. I'm so glad you're on the call.
Me too.
Hello?
Hi. Thanks for joining us.
This is Deb from Ohio.
Hi, Deb. Thanks so much for being on the call.
Thanks for having me.
I think we'll wait a few more minutes. We only have a couple of people on the call right now and a bunch of people signed up. So,
okay.
We'll give them a couple minutes. So as you join the call, please feel free to introduce yourself and let us know where you're calling from.
Hello, this is Wayne Killaway from New Jersey.
Great, thank you.
Hello.
Anyone else? Hi.
Hi. This is Chuck Ruder. I'm from Menifee, California.
Great, thanks for being on the call.
Yes, appreciate being here. Anyway, I'm here to listen pretty much, okay?
Great, thank you. Anybody else want to introduce themselves and let us know where they're calling from?
Bill Bianchi from Chicago.
Wonderful. Anyone else join us?
We're here.
Wonderful.
Good. Someone else?
So I think we'll just give it one more minute. All of you are wonderful. You're on the call nice and prompt, which is lovely. Just for any latecomers, I think we'd like to give it one more moment. For anyone who just joined, once again, my name is Francesca Lobasso, and I'm on staff at Healthcare Now. And if anybody has any questions about muting or unmuting, you can press 4-star, and that would be great if you're not speaking, if you want to just mute yourself, because it helps cut down on background noise and keep the line nice and clear. Anybody new join us? Anyone else want to introduce themselves? Let us know where you're calling from.
I just pressed 4-star and they said invalid option.
Sometimes it switch it if you press *4. Sometimes some phones are strange. So try that.
It should be *4.
Yeah, if 4-star doesn't work, try *4. All right. Anybody else want to introduce themselves? Let us know where they're calling from.
Francesca, this is Linda Lee from St. Louis, Missouri.
Great. Thank you for being on the call. All right. So I'll just, for anybody else new who joined us, once again, my name is Francesca Lobasso, and I'm on staff at Healthcare Now, and it's almost 5 after. So, Lori, if you're ready, I would love to just introduce Lori Wen, who's wonderful and who is the executive director of PNHP New York Metro. I guess I'll just say take a moment to say a couple words about this call before I hand it to Lori, because it's kind of new. We're doing these skill building calls now once a month. This is our third call, and the focus or the idea is really just to help share skills and really, you know, like specific, you know, I think, yeah, I mean, I guess skills is the best word that, that people may have to highlight the amazing work that's going on around the country and to really just share some, like, really specific tips and tools that people can use, you know, to promote single payer around the country. So Lori has a lot of great experience around doing media outreach, and I'm very excited to have her on the call. So I'm going to hand it over to Lori.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, Francesca, and everyone else who's on the call. I really appreciate all the work that you all are doing all across the country. So thank you for that. The first thing I would like to mention, just two things at the beginning. One is to distinguish between planning an overall media strategy for your campaign versus what we're really going to focus on during this call, which is how to do outreach to press for, let's say, for a particular event. The first one, developing a media strategy, has a lot more to do with messaging. And because of the constraints of this, we only have a one-hour phone call, and messaging, as you probably all know, is kind of an unending conversation. So so we won't be able to do everything that is related to media during the call. We're going to focus specifically on the structure and the process that we need to deliver the message versus developing messaging itself. And then also just to distinguish between what can be sometimes called external media versus internal media. Internal media would be your email blast to your members and to your constituents, and your internal communication with your group or your coalition versus reaching out to media. And I, of course, realize that people on the call probably have different levels of experience. So some of the ideas we'll go through may be things that you're very familiar with, but hopefully there might be other ideas that that are new to you. So the first section, we're going to talk about targeting media outlets and building relationships with those outlets and with specific editors and reporters. Why do we have to target specific outlets? Don't we want every outlet to cover what we do? I mean, yes, we do. We would love to be, you know, on the front page of the New York Times every day, and we would love to be on MSNBC every day. But the reality is, I think I can safely say that, you know, all our groups, number one, have limited resources, financial and human resources. So we And also, it is important to remember that media is not an end in and of itself. Media is a way for us to magnify our message and to get to intended audiences. And again, while we want everyone, we want 300 million Americans to all hear our message, but it is important to focus our limited resources to see what is the most effective way, which are the groups and the outlets that would help us get through to those groups that are most strategically important for us to for our campaigns to reach. So, for example, let's be very concrete about that. Let's say the divestment campaign. I personally think it's a very exciting campaign for the single-payer movement to take on. So business outlets and business reporters would be should be interested in the divestment campaign, and it has to do with divesting from, you know, private insurance companies, and those companies are businesses and they have shareholders, and that's why we're targeting them. So that may be there may be a number of new outlets and new reporters that many healthcare activists have not reached out to previously. Maybe we were previously really focusing on health reporters. So that's one very concrete example. Another one is a state bill. Many of us are working on state single-payer campaigns, and hopefully that will lead to a domino effect and eventually help usher in a national single-payer. So for state bills, so again, many of us have been working perhaps some of us exclusively on national, and so maybe we weren't cultivating and targeting outlets and reporters who focus on the state house and legislative news, right? So in New York State, for example, in Albany, there are various there are TV stations with specific programs, a nightly review on what happened in the state house, right? So that's a very obvious thing that some of us maybe we were not targeting and building relationships with those reporters and those programs and those outlets, but it's very obvious if you're going to be working on the state bill. Now, again, that doesn't mean we don't want to be in the New York Times and on MSNBC. And when you do your press release and when you send out your blast, you send it out to everyone. But when you have limited time and you're going to focus on building relationships and making phone calls to a smaller number of outlets than the ones that you're blasting your releases to, that's when it really counts to do good research and to build those relationships. So, again, it may sound obvious, but very often activist groups don't have the time to do solid research. Which reporters and which outlets have covered this issue or a related issue? Or maybe it's a reporter who has covered who has written a story or even a series of stories on the same target that your current campaign has, but maybe it's not about healthcare, right? So if it's a particular legislator that has been plagued by scandals lately and you're targeting that legislator for some reason, well, look up which reporters have been writing about that legislator. And some of the situations are much more obvious, like if you are targeting a particular private health insurance company, then dig up which reporters have written about this before. And so it's not only which reporters have written about single payer or healthcare reform, but dig a little deeper and look at related coverage. So wire services is very important to try to build relationships with the local reporters and photographers who work for wire services. So that means, of course, the Associated Press. That means Reuters. And for images, it means Getty Images. Reuters also has photographers. And the reason that wire services are so important, of course, is that their stories and their photos can get picked up by hundreds of outlets or, you know, internationally. And while our movement is, you know, notoriously we've had a hard time getting a lot of mainstream coverage, and we know why. You know, there's this idea of lack of political visibility, and there's a self-fulfilling prophecy a lot of times among the opinion makers and the media that they're less interested in covering this than other things that they mistakenly think to be to have more political currency. And so sometimes we are not able to get a thoughtful, long article written about it or a thoughtful, long clip in a news program about our issue. Sometimes the best that we can do is to get a wire photo of something we did, let's say a rally, a protest of some sort. And if you are able to craft a visually interesting situation at a rally and you have built up, hopefully, a relationship with some of these wire photographers, or even if you don't have that relationship yet, but you have alerted them and some of them come, a Getty Images photographer who has taken some good photos of your visually interesting action, that picture can be picked up by hundreds of outlets including international outlets. But of course, it for our cause, what we really want is domestic coverage. That would be very helpful to you, and with a good caption. If people are glancing at their newspaper, they may not read every single article, but if you have a really good photo that gets picked up by photo editors across the country at various newspapers and also online on a lot of news websites, then that's a very good way to get your issue across. And sometimes they'll pick up a whole series of them, especially online. There might be 15 pictures from your action that are picked up because it was taken by a wire photographer and not the photographer of a local newspaper. So that's a very good way to go. And I have found it very useful. Some of the photographers that I started building a relationship with during the 2009 series of civil disobedience actions at private insurance companies, that's 2009 in the fall, they knew that we had interesting actions. They were dramatic. They were very timely, of course, because of the debate in D.C. at the time. And I would, in addition to sending them press releases, I would text them, and of course I would call them, and they would text me back, ask me questions. And the day of, if they're running late, they will text me. If they're not in town, they will set me up with a colleague of theirs who worked for the same wire service and make sure that it was covered, and then they will get the pictures get picked up by a lot of different sites. So don't forget the photographers. Spend a little time on building some relationships with them. And then a couple points about building relationships with reporters and assignment editors. Don't be afraid of them. They are usually extremely busy and sometimes can sound very impatient. And, of course, you do have to sound like you know what you're doing. But it's like dealing with politicians. We should not be intimidated. Be firm and confident and be succinct. If they ask you something you don't know, say that, I'll get back to you. We have a number of policy experts in our coalition or in my organization who can answer that in detail. Let me get back to you. And be a resource to them. Try to conduct your interactions with them so that you are, confidence helps a lot. You want to make them feel like you are a resource to them, that they should come to you for information, and that you either yourself are an expert on this issue or that you have access to experts. So, and then finally, try to think from their perspective, right? They have deadlines. They need you to be brief. They want everything to be convenient. Have everything ready for them. They often have lost an email, send it to them again, and have a simple, straightforward narrative ready for them. In terms of keeping a very good press list when you're building these relationships with these outlets and these reporters, I recommend using a Google Doc so that you can share this with others in your organization or in your coalition of activists, and have columns that indicate which events did you call these reporters about, and what were their responses, and did they end up covering the event, and were they friendly, et cetera. That would really help you the next time you need to reach them get a better sense of how much time you want to spend on trying to work on these specific outlets and reporters. And don't forget bloggers. Develop a press list of bloggers, not just traditional media. So are there any questions on this section before I move on to the next session?
I'm not sure. This is Chuck calling. The media that you were talking about earlier, what was it? One was national and the other was local, the photograph?
Well, I was talking about Getty Images as a wire service.
There you go. There you go. How can you tell who's who? Or do you invite the wire services?
I'm sorry? How do you figure out who works for a wire service?
Yeah. You remember you said it's a good idea to get onto the wire service because it sometimes goes international?
I have no idea how to do that.
Okay. So one does not get onto a wire service. What I mean is, as the Associated Press is a wire service. So I'm sorry if that was confusing. Let me explain it more clearly. We don't get on a wire service. What is good to know is, you know, the Associated Press, right, they're not their own news outlet. They're not ABC News or they're not New York Times, right? They employ reporters who write stories and then they sell it to the Chicago Tribune or to the New York Times or to actual outlets, right? So it's a good kind of bang for your buck, because if you get a wire service, you know, they used to wire it out, right? They like Associated Press and Reuters, right? They wired the story out to other outlets who buy it from them. So that's a way of getting to a lot of different outlets by interesting one reporter or one editor. So that's what I mean. So we don't need to do anything to get on the wire service. It's just that we're trying to get wire services interested in us so that their stories can get picked up and by other outlets. You're welcome. Yeah, so that's Associated Press, there's Reuters, and then for photographers or for photos is also the Associated Press. There's also AFP, which is the French equivalent of the Associated Press, and there's Getty Images, which is probably the most widely used wire service for photos.
Is that GETTY?
Yes, GETTY, yep.
Sorry, this is Matt Dillaway in New Jersey. I'm thinking that the question we have is where to start. How do we Google Associated Press and get a phone number to call? Do you give us the name of somebody you know there, or do we find somebody's name out?
Right. That's a very good question. Yeah, very good question. In the follow-up email that Francesca will send to you, I will provide you with links to websites that can help you generate a local and national press list. So I think, you know, I'm pretty sure one can put in one's zip code or maybe a number of zip codes or maybe a city. Actually, it's not so much about zip codes. Sorry about that. There are various media markets, right? So it would be like Greater Philadelphia, right? So, and one can generate a press list. And some services charge money, but I think there are websites out there that don't charge money. So you can start brand new by just simply generating one like that, and we'll make sure that we give you information in the follow-up email. Another way to do it is to reach out to an ally organization who perhaps has been either maybe around longer or maybe has a little bit more resources and perhaps has a staff person, and maybe they already have an existing press list that they could share with you. I think many allied organizations are not afraid of sharing a press list. So that would also be a good way to start.
This is Joanne. I'm not sure if I'm muted or not.
No, we can hear you. We can hear you.
You can. All right. How would you do the research to find out which reporters had been covering the stories that you might want to share?
Yes, very good question. So, to start, you know, you can just Google, right? If you start with the obvious, you know, single payer, and if you are in Chicago, you know, start with single payer and you know, maybe Chicago Tribune, you know, or whichever outlets that you're interested in, and you'll see the various articles and maybe TV coverage that has been, you know, on single payer. And, you know, you can choose in Google, you can choose a date range and, you know, from, you know, the last 2 years from this date to this date, right? So you start by Googling and you'll see which reporters. Now for a lot of cities, there aren't really dedicated reporters on single payer. Sometimes for large news outlets like the New York Times, the New York Times, for example, has two reporters basically who write about federal healthcare policy. Right, Robert Pear and David Hersenhorn, and they're both based in D.C., and that's what they work on. Right. So, and one finds that out by searching. By, you know, you, if you're targeting the New York Times, you go to the New York Times website, you put in single payer or healthcare reform or something, and you'll see the vast majority of the articles, if you search those terms on the New York Times website, are written by those two people.
Mm-hmm.
Those two guys are like the experts on it, and they're kind of stuck with that. So you start with that, and then like I said, once you've done that obvious one, you know, single payer, you know, you can do related search. That may not be so obvious at the beginning, right? Like if it's about divestment, maybe you look up TIA Craft. You know, who is there a reporter in your city or nationally who's been covering TIA Craft-related stuff or, you know, business? So does that help?
Yes, thank you.
Welcome. And, you know, again, I want to mention it's important to remember that there are allied groups out there. I mean, depending on, you know, who your group is, whether your group is a, you know, local chapter of a national organization, in which case, ask national staff if they can help you, or ask other chapters if there are certain things they can help you with. If you're not a local chapter of a national organization, there are probably other groups you're familiar with that you've done a lot of stuff with, maybe peace groups, right? Maybe I know there are people on the call who are very active in Progressive Democrats of America. There are a number of other groups whose members probably regularly show up at your single-payer rallies, right? So ask them. You never know. Maybe they have a press list, or if they don't have a good press list, they may know, oh, this reporter from this station does all the health stuff or whatever it is. So don't be afraid to ask your allied group for help.
I have another question. Oh, go ahead.
Sure.
Oh, sorry, this is Francesca. I just wanted to say something really quick to add to what you said, Lori, about building relationships, which is something that you touched on, which is so important in terms of building relationships with journalists and reporters, because also reaching out to allied organizations for their lists and their contacts is great. And also remember that, you know, like reporters are also just people. You know, you can also, if you reach out to one reporter and they're like, oh, I'm sorry, I cover finance, I don't cover health, you know, you can say to them, oh, sorry, I had the wrong number. Can you let me know who does? You know, like
right.
It's very much like if you have a contact who works for a paper or a local news station, you can reach out to them and say, oh, I know this isn't your beat, but could you let me know who you think might be interested in this story or something like that, too. So I think that is also what's important about building relationships with people and that work for media outlets as well.
Yep, definitely. And I'm sorry, before we get to your other question, I want to reiterate that while I started with talking about building relationships with reporters and outlets, that's kind of the optimal situation. I do not mean to say that unless you have already started this kind of medium-term process of building these relationships, you can't get them to show up to anything. You know, you can just send them a release. That is not the case at all. Right? Go ahead wherever you are and you have an action in 2 weeks. You know, once you've gotten through and maybe we've helped you with getting the very basics of getting a press list to start with, go ahead and blast people. You don't already have to have a relationship with them to send them stuff. But the optimal situation in the medium term is to be able to build some relationships. Sorry, we'll get back, come back to your question.
Okay. Our campaign is a state campaign to get single payer here in Oregon, and we have a number of rather large papers in the metropolitan areas, but we also have smaller papers all over the state, and I'm just wondering, are you thinking that it's more strategic to target the larger papers because they have more readership or to try to get it out to all these smaller papers?
Right. That's a really good question. Yeah. I think I would start by blasting all of them. And then once you've done it a few times with various things that you're doing and you see their responses, right, when you make the pitch calls to them, which I will go more into more details about how to make pitch calls and what the goals are of making these calls, you will start to get a sense of, you know, who's interested, right, especially when they actually cover you, then I think after a few of these actions, you'll partially answer your own questions, because there's no reason to think, oh, we should only focus on these smaller local papers, and not think about the larger paper, because the larger paper may very well be interested, right? But there would be a reason to think, okay, we're not going to waste our time. We've called and sent press releases to the larger paper 10 times, and they never gave us the time of day. Now, you keep them on your list. You're going to keep blasting them, and once in a while you're still calling them, but you're going to spend less time focusing on trying to, you know, you'll spend less time on them because you are getting more better responses from the smaller ones. What is also very important is to get back to the first point we were saying, right? At this time in your campaign, who is your targeted audience? Who are you trying to win over on this? Again, I know the answer in some ways is always everyone. We want everyone, right? But, and this is different for every campaign, right? Where you are in your campaign, are you at a relatively early stage where most voters have never heard of it, what single payer is? Or you know, in Oregon, I think, you know, you guys have done good effective work. And so maybe you're actually at a slightly different stage where you're trying to get specific districts, right? Maybe you're trying to get specific state assembly members or state senators to get on your bill. In that case, you want to put extra special attention and work on the districts represented by these legislators, the newspapers in those districts, right? Mm-hmm. So that would make a lot of sense.
Sorry,
go ahead.
Are you talking about press releases or trying to get coverage with articles, reporters covering your cause with articles?
Right. I'm talking about, you know, with press releases, when you do an email blast, since it doesn't really cost you extra time to blast it to everyone, always blast it to everyone. But since everybody has limited time to make phone calls and to kind of, you know, try to, the time-consuming part is making phone calls and trying to build a relationship, then focus on the ones that are most strategically important to you right now and also who are giving you some sort of relatively positive response.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so let's move to the next section, which is a brief section, really, just to remind us of the various channels to deliver our message. Most of this call will focus on trying to get out media coverage for an event, most probably a rally or something like that. But, of course, the other ways, the other channels to deliver your message, one is, of course, a press conference. Another one is to try to schedule an editorial board meeting with a newspaper, or it could be the equivalent of a TV station. But very often, the editorial board of the local newspapers, that sounds a bit intimidating, but you would be surprised. And I think it does also depend if you're in a very large city and the main newspapers in that city consider itself to be a national and international news outlet, then it is much harder. If you're in a smaller city, it should not be that hard if a number of you approach the editorial board of a newspaper or more than one newspapers, and that the chances of your getting a meeting are pretty good, actually. And that gives you a really good opportunity to present the case without having to make a pitch in, you know, 30 seconds. So that's one way of delivering your message. And of course, of building a relationship with the editorial board. Yes.
I'm wondering, is there a handout? You said the next item. Is there something I should be looking at to be more organized in my following?
Oh, no, sorry, but there will be some material sent out to you after the call.
Okay.
Francesca was, yeah, but no. Sorry.
Okay, and then I don't actually know what an editorial board meeting is. Is this something like they meet regularly and you ask to get on their agenda and have an allotted time, or is this asking them to have a special meeting just to meet with you? And can
Good point. Some papers do both. So it depends. So contact yours and see if they allow people, you know, if to see which one they do, or maybe they do both.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you said to try to schedule, I just want to know if I'm, you know, writing it right for me to understand later what you were talking about. Try to schedule an editorial board meeting with a press outlet. That means like one newspaper or one radio station or one TV station?
Yes. Yes, it's most, I guess that term is most commonly related to a newspaper, to have an editorial board, but there will be an equivalent team. Some news programs, you know, have the equivalent of a written editorial, and that team may be called something different. But I would start with a newspaper. That's the most kind of common.
Thank you.
And it's, yeah, you're welcome. And it's okay to... you know, I think most people I know, and certainly myself, you know, who, and I think Francesca and others I know, who have now accumulated some experience in doing press, I think most of us never went to a training. We ended up learning from other activists that we did some, you know, a lot of volunteer activist work with. And, you know, and we didn't exactly know at every point how everything worked. And it's okay if you called the newspaper and you don't have every answer, it's okay. Just be confident. It's not your job. You don't work at the newspaper, right? They're not going to think badly of you if you don't know exactly how this works and if you don't get every term right. That's okay. Okay, sorry. So that's another way. So another outlet, another channel to deliver your message is to propose a story idea to a newspaper or to a radio station or to a TV station. Now, again, I think in a city like New York, that's very difficult to do. In other cities where I think it's less competitive, where the local newspaper does not consider itself to be, you know, the New York Times considers itself to be a different kind of outlet, then it's more likely that after a number of attempts, and especially if you have a coalition of people trying together, you can call up a newspaper and propose a story idea. Now, this works particularly well with weeklies as opposed to dailies, and which is not to say you should not try dailies. It's just that with dailies, sometimes things are very crazy because they have daily deadlines. So you may want to try with a weekly if your city has weeklies and propose an idea. And we'll talk a little bit later more about how to make it newsworthy, because single payer to all of us on this call is an extremely important cause. And how can it not be? People are dying because we don't have a good healthcare system. But that in itself does not make it newsworthy, according to journalists and editors. So we'll talk a little bit more about that later. But so that's one way to do it. And then another channel to try to deliver our message to the press, or rather to our target audiences through the press. And this one is very obvious, and maybe many of you have done it, is to write a letter to the editor. And the cousin is writing an op-ed. Now, sometimes I think people feel like letters to the editors don't do very much. Oh, you know, I've been writing those for 20 years, and you know, we still don't have single payer. You know, and it's true that they're not a tenth or a hundredth as dramatic as a civil disobedience action. But I think both and many other tactics are useful. Even when letters to the editors are not published, the vast majority of them the vast majority of them are read, you know, by the opinion staff. And so the opinion staff includes they take care of the op-eds and letters to the editors, right? The staff, they read the vast majority of the letters. Even if they only print a small portion, we are educating them. The more letters they get about single payer, even if they don't print them, it influences their understanding of, number one, the issue, and number two, which is even more important in a way, is how much support there is for our cause, right? And an op-ed, some newspapers do not take solicitations for op-eds. Some do, which means you can call them up and ask to speak to the opinion editor of the newspaper and introduce yourself and say why you would like to write an opinion piece and what your particular angle is. So that is something you can try to do. And then the last channel I want to mention to get your message out, and this is, the again, an obvious one, is to write a press statement or a press release. The two are a little bit different, and we'll go more into the differences later. But this is in the case of not having a rally or march or a press conference, but still writing a press release to say, you know, this is a newsworthy item, and this is our cause, and this is who we are. So are there any questions? And then if not, I will go more into the nitty-gritty of how to very concretely try to get coverage for a specific event. Okay, great. I want to remind us that the ideas that we are sharing on this call, like everything else, is about trying to increase our chances of getting covered, right? There will always be exceptions. So, but from my experience and from the experience of a lot of other activists I know who have done media work, including people who have had, who were press officers at nonprofits with whom I've done activist work, and they've taught me a lot of what they learned professionally. This is kind of the accumulation of some of our experiences. It doesn't mean that there aren't exceptions. Or if we say, well, it's more likely for you to get press if you do A, B, and C, you can always say, well, but I know of a situation where people did D and it actually, and they got covered, right? So that's the case. So the first topic I'd like to discuss under concretely how to do outreach for an event has to do with timing. So let's say you have a state single payer campaign and you want to do a rally. So what are some of the things that you need to consider in terms of timing? Right, so the first one is external timing, meaning the larger political context and what reporters and editors would consider a news hook, right? So if your state legislators are embroiled in, fighting over a budget, that's probably not the best time to try to do your rally, unless your state is so close to getting, and I'm not aware of any state that's in that place right now. But unless you're so close to actually getting your single payer bill passed, then it's different. The urgency is different. And if there's a week or two where any news about the state legislature has to do with the budget, well, that's not the time to do it, right? So that's the external context. And then news hook. What could be happening that you can kind of piggyback on or use as a news hook? Because again, while this is hugely important to us and it's hugely important to people who are either losing their lives or they're really suffering because they don't have healthcare, unfortunately, in the eyes of reporters and editors, that's not necessarily newsworthy. We have to make news with our cause. We have an issue. And news is supposed to be something that is new, in fact, something that's happening that is timely. Now, of course, we can always say, well, but there's a long article in my newspaper today about autism, and that's, there's nothing in particular. There was no bill passed today about autism. There's no, it's something that they put in the newspaper about an important issue. Well, that does happen, and it's wonderful when that happens. But most of the time, to increase our chances, it's very important to try to find a news hook. So, for example, if the governor, again, if you're working on a state campaign, and if the governor lately, there's maybe there's a scandal or maybe there's a lot of pressure about how the governor is much more into profits for corporations than human needs. Well, maybe, you know, you can use that frame for a state single-payer protest at the governor's mansion. If, let's say you're in California and you're actually, both of your chambers passed the bill, but the governor vetoed it, right, with Schwarzenegger, right? So that would be a frame and a hook. Actually, that's more a frame, sorry. That's less of a hook. A hook would be more like the Affordable Care Act. All right, we all know that the Supreme Court is supposed to come down with its decision of whether it's constitutional or not sometime in June. So that's actually a very clear-cut example of a hook that single-payer activists want to use to try to talk about, you know, whether that bill is constitutional or not. We still need universal, publicly financed health care. So that's a new hook. And secondly, regarding timing, and I know this is, you know, this sounds very obvious, but it's good to reiterate. Try to avoid competing with big events and holidays. And also with other protests, because most news outlets, if they are willing, and I hate to use that word, but a lot of times it's that way, if they're willing to give some coverage to a protest, to us it's very different. Well, this other group, let's say an environmental group, is doing something about mountaintop removal or fracking. Well, to us, that's a completely different issue, right? We may be supportive of that issue, but that's a very different issue. But to a lot of news outlets, you know, it's a protest. They're only going to give so much, so many inches in the newspaper or so many minutes on their broadcast to people protesting for some issue, because to some of them, that's how they see it. Then try not to do it the day after this other protest or 2 days after, you know, try to space it out. Although in some cities it's difficult because there are protests every day. And the third one regarding timing, and this again is very obvious to single-payer supporters, is are there important dates that we can use to get our message across more effectively? So Medicare's birthday, that's a big one that single-payer supporters use every year. And then number four, and I cannot emphasize this enough, number four is often ignored and is extremely simple. It's the day of the week and the time of the day. The most common impulse when people are planning an event that they want press coverage of, you know, is that we want a lot of people there. Well, of course we want a lot of, you know, we have a march, we have a rally. We want a lot of people there. Most people are working from Monday to Friday. So we want the action to happen on weekend Saturday so we can get a lot of people there. In that case, I want to remind people deciding when the action is to be clear about what the goals of their action are. The goals often have if the action, for example, has a very direct target, such as a private insurance company, if it's on an example, you want the in that company to see 100 people protesting there. You want them to see it physically, see it's very powerful. I'm just different from them just reading. Somewhere is doing something, right? But if they go in and out, you want the executives and the staff to see 100 people, you know, protesting outside when they get to work, when they get off work, when they go to lunch, you know, whatever. Right, that's goal one. You want the direct target to feel the heat, right? Number two, you know, of course, you want attention. You want media. You want other people to know, right? Number three, is good for you want your members and the constituents of your movement to have a sense of solidarity and to feel empowered, right? So that's an important goal too. So let's say so those three goals. But if you choose your action to be on a Saturday, and if one of your main goals is to get media, and again, depending on which media market you are, having an action on a Saturday may may really decrease your chances of getting covered. Because I think in almost all cities, there are fewer reporters working on Saturdays than on any other day. Because reporters are people, too, and they have jobs, and they don't work 7 days, even though they have other people covering. But there are fewer, there are simply fewer people, reporters, working on the weekends than there are on weekdays. And Saturdays are usually, in some ways, the worst day. There's the fewest number, because by Sunday, they are preparing for their paper on Monday. And even though the Sunday paper is read a lot of those stories are not things that happened on Saturday. So that is something to be aware of. If people say, well, but if we have it on a weekday, we're going to have fewer people. Well, sometimes that's a trade-off that is worthwhile if you want this to increase the chances of getting more media coverage. But, of course, sometimes you get media coverage on weekends anyway. But it's important to know that you're playing one goal against another goal. And time of day is also very important. Again, people will say, well, let's have it at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock so people can get there after work. That is a very difficult time for most. If you want a print story, that's usually a few hours after the print deadline. Again, it doesn't mean that some reporters won't write about it, but for most reporters, they've handed their story in for the day already. And then also for news, if your action is at 10 in the morning or 11 in the morning, even if you have fewer people, you dramatically increase the chances of having reporters finish their stories and get them done by the mid-afternoon. You dramatically increase your chances of getting TV news cover it for the noon news and also for 5 or 6 o'clock news. So that you may sacrifice, you may decide to sacrifice numbers of people attending your action in favor of increasing your chances of getting more coverage. So that's timing. And the next thing I would like to talk about, although just briefly, is how to frame your action. That really goes into messaging, which we don't have time to go into. And we mentioned already, you know, what is newsworthy? Just remember that just because it's important to us, it's important, it's about life and death, we on this call and we in the movement, we know that. But that's not necessarily the perception of journalists and reporters. So we have to make it. We have to make it newsworthy and something that is timely. And then the second one is give a narrative, human stories. Right? That's something that you know people hear a lot. Like in the single payer movement, we really have to be. It's not just about statistics and numbers. It is really about human stories, and that's how we should frame it, and that's how reporters.
Your call cannot be completed as dialed.
Positively.
Please check the number and dial again.
Can people hear me?
2EF.
I can hear you.
Okay, good.
Your call cannot be completed as dialed. Please check the number and dial again.
Okay. Wow.
2EF.
Okay, so, and the last thing I will say very briefly about this framing and this messaging is talking points and sound bites, right? You hear that endlessly, and it's very important. It's very important to try to have just perhaps 3 talking points and stick to them because you know, maybe you'll get, if you're lucky, maybe you'll get 30 seconds. Your whole action may get 30 seconds on the TV news, and you may get a short article somewhere. And while we have tons of interesting, important information, it is not going to translate, and it may even decrease the chances of our making the story at all, right? They can consume your action and end up not putting it, not editing it and putting it in the broadcast, because the narrative is not simple enough. It's unfortunate, but that's kind of what we're dealing with right now. So try to stick with a few very simple talking points. So the next thing I want to mention is location. That affects the chances of your getting coverage. It's pretty obvious, you know, but sometimes you may have the perfect symbolic location for an action, which you want. That's always better than just a central location, a city that everybody can get to. But if you have a symbolic location, that the location itself tells part of the story of your conflict and of your campaign, that is better, except in cases where that location is so hard to get to for most people and that it would take a long time, that reporters just may not take that time to come out in the middle of the day to cover it, your story. So just be aware of that. And then we're going to now talk about press advisory, a press release, and a press statement. A press advisory is different. It's a little bit different from a press release, not too different. An advisory, as you can tell just by the name, it's an advisory. So it's sent out to warn reporters that something is going to happen, whereas a release very often is sent out after something has happened, although not, it doesn't have to be. I mean, release can also be sent out before. But an advisory usually is much shorter. It's more about if you have an event, let's say you have a rally, you want the press to know where, when, who, you know, what, why, you know, all those things, but it's very succinct, usually maybe bullet points. Right? Rally, you know, rally at the governor's mansion, you know, why, you know, because he vetoed a state single-payer bill. You know, well, don't use single-payer in that case because most reporters will not know what it is. You know, you may want to say universal publicly financed health care, or you may just want to say universal health care, you know, for this state or something like that. But the important points about the advisory is mostly about getting the who, what, when, where, why out. It's not a long thing with many, many quotes that comes later with the advisory, with the release, even though the release also should not be too long. So the advisory is usually less than a page with a lot of bullet points, maybe half a page to three quarters of a page. Very clearly, make it visually very clear. If they just glance at it, they know where and when and what it is. And, of course, now it's 2012. It is mostly emailed out, although faxing to certain outlets is still a useful way. I would certainly do both. I mean, email is obvious. You have to email to every outlet. But in addition, faxing sometimes is to certain outlets is useful in addition. The email subject line for an advisory should always, always start with the date and the time of the event that you're trying to get people to come to. And the first, if you only send one advisory out, which there's no reason for you to only send one out, you should send it to, you know, 100, you know, 50, blast it. But the most important one is the AP daybook. Right, the Associated Press Daybook. Because a lot of reporters, no matter what outlet they work for, they subscribe to the AP Daybook, which is a catalog of events that are happening that day. So you send an advisory to AP Daybook, and for New York, if the email is something like APNYC or at AP.com or something. So for every city, it is different, and we can help you figure that out. You can always ask Francesca, or you can probably just figure it out by Googling. So once it's part of the daybook goes out twice the day before an event. So if your event is on Thursday, and you get onto the AP daybook, you know, the day before or even earlier, it will get sent to thousands of outlets, and they will receive it at 4 p.m. the day before, and then again at maybe at midnight or something. They sent it out twice. So that's how a lot of assignment editors decide where to send their reporters that day. The day after, rather. So that's a very important thing to get your event onto. And so you start with the date and time in the subject line, and then a very succinct title. Remember that most people don't actually understand the term single payer. So especially in a title, I would recommend that you never use that in the subject line, because people just may not open the email because they don't even know what it is. But in the case of, if you're protesting the governor's mention because he vetoed the state single-payer bill, then the subject line of that email may be Tuesday, April 5th, 10 a.m., healthcare activist protest at governor's mention, or something, right? So you really got to get the date and time in there, and then as succinctly as possible, what is the action, right? So the title is not for you to talk about your cause exactly, but what that action is. So what is it? It's a protest at the governor's mention, and it's about healthcare, right? So the advisory, certainly you would have to make sure you have your contact information. Make sure to have more than one individual's information and your organization or maybe a coalition. Make sure you have links to more information. Maybe if your organization has a website, and if not, maybe a coalition has a website. And if not, of course, you're also, or not if not. And in addition, you can always put Healthcare Now's website and PNHB's website, because there are many resources on those websites. So it's good to provide links rather than tons and tons of information in either the release or the advisory itself. Right? So any questions about the press advisory?
I don't have a question about what you told me. You just reinforce almost everything that I'm doing. This is Chuck from Menifee.
Great.
But I've been involved with single payer since Sheila Kuhl submitted the bill back in the late 90s. And what I'm looking for, I think we need to, there's an old saying out there, if you keep doing the same thing over and over and expect different results, that means you're a little cuckoo, So here we are doing the same thing over and over again. I think we may need to talk about changing our strategy and go after the small business where our single-payer healthcare plan would benefit the people the most, the small businesses. We need to convince them to, this is really going to help you guys out.
Sure. I'm all for discussion for the single-payer movement strategy. So that may be a different call or a different conference to talk about the movement's overall strategy. But since this call is specifically about, how helping people if they don't have those skills already, helping people understand currently what are the steps and what is the process to try to increase chances of getting press coverage. But that's what this call focuses on. But I completely agree that the movement continuously has to discuss its overall strategy.
I need to make something very clear. Everything that was said on this call is true and works.
Sorry, is what? I couldn't hear you.
True, T-R-U-E, true, and works.
Uh-huh.
And it works, W-O-R-K-S.
Okay.
It's true and it works, everything you guys said today. I'm sorry, I don't have my teeth in.
Oh, no, it's okay. No, there was actually, I don't know about other people, there was a drop-off, like it dropped out for like a second, and so I...
Okay.
Missed those two words.
What I said was what we spoke about today, folks.
Yes.
In my opinion, it is true and it works. It works.
I'm glad.
I've been doing it for years, so I know it works.
Okay, good. Okay. Yes, and that's exactly our goal, I think, for this call, is to share these tools. But this is not an overall strategy for the movement at all. This is a very small discussion about certain concrete tools that can help us increase our chances of getting press coverage. Okay, so that's the advisory. The last thing I want to say about the advisory is that depending on probably how big your action is, and maybe whether there is a very valuable external news hook. In other words, whether you think there will be quite a bit of interest. Sometimes people end up sending an advisory out a week prior as the first advisory. But I would only do this if you think there's really quite a lot of interest and that the action is going to be quite big. But in those cases, people might send out the first advisory a week prior just to give a lot of kind of lead time. And then a few days prior, send out another one, or maybe the day before, right, send out another advisory. And then the morning of, send a press release. Sometimes when people do that, they actually try to use a different angle between the first advisory and the second advisory just to try to cast a wider net, right? So in the case of the governor, like I'm just using that as an example, that you might, the first advisory might be really about, oh, you know, because everybody lately has been talking about this particular situation where the governor seems to care a lot more about corporate profits than about human needs, right? So maybe one is using that angle, but then maybe a few days later, the second advisory may actually, it may use a different angle. It may say something about how, you know, the bill is gaining, you know, new co-sponsors and, you know, and we need this bill. So sometimes people try that, but other times they just use the same advisory and they just send it out once. Sometimes it's only sent out the day prior. And then the day of, the morning of, you email out, do an email blast of your press release. And some people also, in addition to the email blast, fax. And it's very important to do it the day of, in addition to any prior advisories you've sent out, because newsrooms work in a very particular way. And even if the day before you have talked to an assignment editor who was very interested and sounds like they're going to send a reporter, ultimately a lot of decisions don't get made until the morning of, until the day later, right? Until the day of, rather. And because there may be a different assignment editor, and also because there are other things going on. Sometimes a horrible crime that would just, you know, they were interested in it the day before, but something happens the day of, and they may not send you. But it's very important the day of to send it again. Mm-hmm. And I will go more into what happens the day of. And if 9:07 right now, and I'm sorry we're going over. I hope people are okay with that. I think we had some very good questions earlier, and that, you know, that takes a little time. So I hope people are okay. But I'll try to hurry up, maybe. Okay, so a press release, and many of you have probably, you know, written press releases before, and maybe some of you haven't. A press release is a longer, more detailed, fleshed-out advisory. So in it, you give not only the dates and the times and who the organization is and why you're doing it, but you flesh out, really, your cause and your mission. And you definitely want personal quotes. You may put two or even three personal quotes in it. And ask various people in your group or your coalition. Stories, patient stories, of course, are very, very moving. And you may want a quote from a nurse also. And you may want a quote from a doctor. You may want a quote from a clergy member. But if you only have one quote, probably a patient's personal story, that would be very effective. But again, depending on the event, it does depend on the context of the event. So, of course, the headline is extremely important. A lot of people will not even, you know, click open your press release on email if the subject line is not either attention-getting enough or has jargons that they don't understand. So do not assume knowledge. And then the press release should have succinctly a brief explanation of the problem of our healthcare system, and then a brief explanation of the solution, right? Single payer, Medicare for all, universal publicly financed healthcare, and then the action piece, right? Because this is not just about, oh, we have a terrible situation and we have a solution. There has to be something very concrete about an action, such as, well, we have the state single payer bill and the governor vetoed it, or we are gaining, you know, momentum in getting more co-sponsors, and please, you know, we need more. We demand that more legislators sign on, and we ask that voters, you know, ask their legislators to sign on, or whatever the action should be, or divest from TIA craft, or rather to have TIA craft divest from insurance companies. And be sure to say a little bit about your organization's mission, right? And definitely give contact info, and absolutely have to put cell phone numbers because you don't know when they're calling you. And make sure to have more than one, because reporters, they work on deadlines. If they call you, they call your cell, you're not available at that moment, and maybe they just don't end up writing that story. Maybe they don't end up doing anything about it. So have maybe two or even three numbers so that if they can't reach you, they can get to another person. Okay, and then just very briefly, a press statement, which is a little different from a press release, is often a shorter response to something that has happened, for the passage of a bill or to some situation, and sometimes that gets picked up, but press release is the more common form. And then a couple quick tips. When you email press releases or press advisories to news outlets, do not send attachments. Do not attach your press release as a Word document or a PDF or anything, because a lot of news outlets, they don't, if there's an attachment, they will not open your email. So just make it into the body of your email. And then this may sound obvious, but don't bombard news outlets and reporters with press releases and advisory. You know, if every little thing, every other day you send them something, you'll probably develop a reputation, and then they won't open anything that you sent them. And the smaller the outlet, the higher the chances that they will lift entire passages from your press release, which, of course, is why people do that. That's exactly what you want the world to hear, and that's what they're lifting. Small outlets who don't have enough staff may very well just take what you say and put it in their piece. And some news sites online actually will just put your whole press release on their website. So it's kind of nice when that happens. Pitch calls. So those are phone calls that you make to news outlets before your event. And it's good to make them the day before, and again, depending on how big the action is and how much interest you think people have, you may want to make it even a couple days prior. You call the outlet and try, if at all possible, although it's very difficult, to have a five-second pitch, because they are very busy. And if they pick up the phone and you say, hello, my name is so-and-so, I am with this organization, which is part of this other coalition, which you've already lost them. So call, when you make a pitch call for an event, start with 5 seconds. And if they're still interested, then you have a chance to go, you know, a little longer. But say, I'm calling about a protest at the governor's mansion Thursday morning because people need universal health care and he vetoed the bill. Or, you know, something that immediately, I'm calling about a protest, right? So that's news. That's an event. Rather than I'm calling about a cause. Right. I'm calling about universal healthcare. I'm calling because, you know. So instead of a cause or a mission, you're calling about an event. And take very good notes. I mentioned earlier that I think it's very helpful if you keep your press list as a Google Doc, which can be easily shared and updated by a number of people. And but make a copy of it, because if people are not familiar with it, they may, if they make a mistake, then it may erase some of the, you know, your old notes. But for people who are very familiar with how to use it, it's a very good way to keep notes. When you call to make these pitches, you keep good notes as to whether you were able to reach them or you left a message, whether they sounded interested, and whether they referred you to someone else. So, and then after the event, you keep track of whether they actually came and covered your event. Press kits. If you have folders to put a few documents in, great. If you don't, that's not a big deal. You can staple a few pieces of documents together. I would recommend keeping your press kits very slim. I think if you put 10 documents in it, people are not going to read it, and they may not even read the one or two things because it's overwhelming. Maybe you put 3 or 4 things in it, the press release and then just a few background documents about your cause and maybe something specifically about that campaign. Okay, so the next thing, and we're going to try to wrap up soon. Sorry, it's going over.
I'm sorry, what do you do with the press kit? You hand it to the reporter when they arrive there? You can't email in advance because then you have these attachments. I mean, what do you do
with the press kit? Yes, correct. Yes. The press kit is a physical kit that you give to the reporters at the event.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I'll talk a little bit more about that on the day of, right? What do you do on the day of the event? And a few things I already mentioned, such as early in the morning, and this is very important. Doesn't matter if you've already emailed them a couple times earlier in the week. Morning of, email, and if you have the ability and the time to also fax in addition to emailing, blast it again to all your contacts, big and small, responsive and unresponsive contacts. Okay. Second, make some final pitch calls. And you probably are very busy that morning and don't have a lot of time to make calls, so you have to have very good notes from the day before. Which were the outlets who said they were interested? And which were the outlets that you only got to leave messages for, but for other reasons you think they may be interested? So limit them. There might be, you know, you may have time for 10 calls or maybe even 6 calls or 12 calls. But definitely follow up with the people who the day prior said they were interested, because there may be a different assignment editor of that day, but you know that there is some interest from that outlet, and remind them. And sometimes they'll end up saying stuff like, well, you know, but there's that car accident or there's that shooting that happened, so I'm not sure if I can send anyone anymore. You know, then you have another minute to try to convince them that your story is also really important. And then at the event itself, this is very, very important, this next point. I cannot emphasize it enough. You need somebody whose dedicated job it is to be what I just personally call the press wrangler, like a cowboy. You need somebody to wrangle the press. This seems very obvious to have somebody to, if you put so much time and energy into organizing an event, who's one of the main goals of which is to get media attention, you'd be surprised how many times people do that and yet don't devote the time and energy of somebody who at the event is going to really focus on making sure the press, that we get the most out of them, really. Like, so you need somebody there to greet all the reporters, give them the press kits. You need a sign-in sheet for the reporters to sign in, their names, their outlets, their email addresses, their phone numbers. And if you don't have the sign-in sheet, let's say you just forget, ask for their cards. Many of them will give you their cards. And then you enter their information into your press list if you don't already have them. Because this may be a different reporter from the same outlet who's on your list, right? If they say they don't have their cards with them and you didn't have a sheet, just write it on any piece of paper, write it on anything so that you know exactly who came to cover your event. That's very important because you need to be able to dig up the coverage later, and it really is much easier if you know who was there. And also in terms of building relationships with them. So this is very important. Many times people end up having an action, they put a lot of energy into it, and then at the end they're like, oh, I think this channel was there, and I think that newspaper was there, but there's no comprehensive, clear way of finding out. So somebody needs to be dedicated to that, to doing that. That person also, in addition to just getting all the information, the contact information from the reporters, that person should be anticipating the needs of the reporters and offering, saying things like, would you like to talk to a nurse? Or, you know, again, depending on the action and what the specific angle is, there might be specific spokespeople who are particularly effective in getting the angle across, right? And if it has to do, maybe it's a healthcare provider angle. So offer it up to the reporters. Would you like to talk to a nurse? I have a nurse here who has this particular story to tell. And very often they may be like, oh, yeah, that sounds interesting. That's a good angle, right? Sometimes they're not interested, and that's fine, but you can offer it to them. Or you may say, or do you want to talk to somebody who, you know, somebody who has a really difficult story in her family. They went bankrupt because they didn't, because their insurance didn't pay for their, you know, whatever it is, offer it to them. Otherwise, they just wander around and they'll ask whoever they see, and that person may not have as compelling a story as the spokespeople that you have already identified. So it's very important to do this kind of wrangling. You know, you get more control out of the coverage that you get this way. And then also offer any post-action contacts that they may want. And they may not want it at the time, but you never know. And again, your contact information should already be on the press release, which is in the press kit, which they took. But they're running around. A couple hours later, when they're finishing their story, they may have lost the press release or the press kit. So make it easy for them. When you're talking to them, you know, just give them your, you know, ask if they interview you, you know, offer to them, well, would you like my email? Here's my cell phone if you need to call me later. That can be very helpful. So I'm about to wrap up now. So a frame to, this is a helpful way to think about how to interact with reporters in general, I think. And it may sound a little negative and manipulative, but I think it's actually kind of helpful, right? Think ahead. What is the next step? Like, how can I exploit this situation? What more can be milked out of the situation, right? Even if you didn't organize the event yourself, let's say you're at a big anti-war rally that you did not organize, and there are 5,000 people there, and a reporter comes up to you and talks to you and interviews you, right? Most people, after that happens, they just say goodbye to the reporter, and that's that, right? But you can always say, you can give them your contact. They may be like, okay, fine. They may not use it, but think ahead. What can you do to kind of cover all the bases? If you give them your number and your email, later on maybe they realize they scribbled your name wrong and they couldn't read it and they were going to take you out of the story because they just couldn't, you know, or something. But if they have your contact, they can always come back to you. And also ask them, after they interview you, you may say, do you want to speak to someone else from a different angle? You know, maybe someone else you can offer. Like, always constantly think of how you can be a resource to them and how you can get more out of the situation. Okay, so this is the last part. It's follow-up work. Follow-up work is very important. I have been involved in organizing actions where, you know, there were a few reporters who came to the event, but because of the follow-up work that we did, right after the action, in the afternoon, we got more news coverage. Let's say maybe we got 5 news stories out of the afternoon work we did after the action than, let's say, the 3 reporters who came to the actual event. Because people are busy, they may be interested, but they just couldn't physically be at your action at that time. So after the event, if the event is done by noon or 1 o'clock, then you and hopefully a couple other people who organize the action with you, you know, you get to one place, hopefully, and you make phone calls to the news outlets who said they were interested at some point, maybe the day before, but they didn't show up. So you call them, you say, oh, I appreciate your interest in covering, you know, our event. I realize you're maybe too busy and you couldn't be there, but I'm going to send you a link of the photos that we have. And also, if you want to do a phone interview with me or with a policy expert we have or with, you know, whoever, I'm happy to do it now or at a time that's convenient for you. So just offer it. This is something that people do. There's not an embarrassing thing to do. And if they're not interested, they're not interested, and they'll tell you. But it can be very effective, especially if you are able to send them a link of the Wire photos, for example. Right? Say, oh, a Getty photographer was there. Look up the link for them and send it to them. Or maybe you have video. Right? Send them the video link. So basically, once the action is over, your work is not over yet. Go home or go to your office and make a bunch of calls and try to interest people even though the event is over. And the very last item I want to bring up is digging up the coverage, which is so important for the morale of your fellow activists, of your organization, and of your movement. Right? Number one, it's good for morale to know that you are covered. Number two, you want to know what people said and how they covered it. And number three, to build relationships and to build up your press list. You want to know who actually, not only did they show up, but that they actually wrote a story about it, or that they actually had, broadcast that clip. And sometimes you can write a brief email just to thank them for covering and say, you know, if I can help you with any, you know, if you need any sources in the future, if you need a health policy expert, let me know. Like, that's a good way of continuing your relationship with the reporters. And I think that's the last thing I have to say. Thank you for staying on this call.
I'm not sure. Are you hearing me?
I can hear you, yes.
Okay. That star 4 doesn't seem to work. Well, thank you very much. I have one question. This is a moment. You said not to ever send attachments, but I've also heard we should send photos, our own photos, I guess, and that's the only way I know how to send them.
That's a very good question. And I have a two-part answer. One is, if you or maybe someone else who can help you figure it out, it's better if you can send a link to photos. So if you can upload them to a site like Flickr or some other photo site, then you can send a link, because sending attachments can be problematic. Some people at these outlets will simply not open them. Mm-hmm. The second part of my answer is, if you already have a little bit of relationship with these reporters, and it doesn't have to be a relationship like you've known them for 6 months, it could be that you called them yesterday and they were interested, and then they didn't show up. So the next day, so after the action, you sent them and they may already, you know, recognize this, and then you say, oh, here's photos, and then they may open those attachments. But if they don't know you at all, then they're not going to open the attachments. Mm.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Mm. Hello.
Hello.
Oh, good. This is Leona. I wasn't sure if the mute or unmute was working correctly.
Yes.
Listen, I had a couple of questions. I'm mm-hmm. taking notes here. I missed. Now tell me. I wrote what a press advisory was, a press release. What's a press statement?
Oh, a press statement is often a shorter press release that is usually not about a particular event that is happening. It's often in reaction to something that happened in the outside world. So it's usually more kind of like, oh, well, this, for example, let's say the ACA passed, you know, our organization thinks the ACA, you know, blah, 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 we should instead have, you know. So it may be like a short statement just to have to state the organization's position. And it's less likely to be a press release where you really try to get more of the human angle in, you try to get a number of personal quotes in, and also often there's there's an event that you're trying to get people to, and the press statement is usually different in those ways.
I see. May I ask one more question?
Sure.
When you talked about timing, mm-hmm. the day of the week and time of the day,
mm-hmm.
and you had three subtopics to that. One about, I remember the last one, well, you want the members to feel empowered. Be clear about what the goals of the actions are.
Right, just because I think, yeah, exactly. Because I think being clear about the goals helps people, I know this sounds a little funny, helps people decide the timing. Because the timing, certain times of the day, you can have a larger crowd, but those times are probably the day where you will likely have less press coverage. So you have to make a decision about what is more important to you. I personally think that if you were going to have an action where you could get 100 people at 5 o'clock and you can only get 40 people at 10 o'clock, but if nobody covers the 100 people action at 5 o'clock, but if two or three reporters will cover the 10 o'clock, I would rather have a smaller action. I mean, I'm simplifying things. There are usually, you know, there are a number of other factors that people consider, you know, such as if it's the divestment action and you want all the shareholders walking in to know, then maybe it's a little bit less about press coverage. Maybe you decide that it's a little bit more about physically having more people there to know, let all the shareholders feel the heat. You know, so there are a number of factors, but that's what I meant.
Okay. If nobody else has a question, I have another one. But I don't want to be greedy. I'll wait. If nobody else has one, I've got one, though.
Okay. Go ahead.
All right. I'm affiliated with the Progressive Democrats of America here in
uh-huh.
Michigan,
mm-hmm.
and we're having three events coming up this weekend. Around Congressman John Conyers' reelection and about this movie called The Healthcare Movie.
Uh-huh.
I've not seen it. Maybe, have you? But, well, and anyway, no, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have asked you the question. Here's the deal. On Saturday, we're having a showing of the movie, and on Sunday, we're having a showing of the movie. I have been advertising on Facebook and sending out emails to my network, and PDA has been making email blasts. And I haven't done anything with the press yet. I don't
mm-hmm.
know. Well, I've got some notes to work from here. What would you add? Would you add anything? What would you add to what? What advice might you give me?
Right. Okay, so let me understand. So the film is being screened on Saturday and again on Sunday?
Yeah, two different venues. On
okay.
Saturday it's at the... Yeah.
Okay. I think that if it's just a film screening, then the press is not going to be interested. So you need to see if there is some sort of an angle that would make it newsworthy. For example, if somebody... speaking.
Yeah, that was my other question. What is newsworthy? What does that mean?
Right. I mean, that's you know, the shortest answer is, you know, the word news comes from something that is new, right? So it has something to do with timeliness and something that's happening now. Now you can say, well, the film screening is happening now, but that in itself is not perceived to be so interesting to most reporters.
I hear you.
So,
I hear
yeah.
you. Yeah,
so
I'm
but
not
if
surprised.
You have a speaker,
yeah.
right, if John Conyers is speaking there, then that's news.
And he is. On Sunday he's coming.
Okay.
On Sunday he's coming.
Okay.
At the end.
So I would really use that as the main attraction for the press. And because I think for Saturday you don't really have any there's no attraction for them to go cover a movie screening on Saturday.
Gotcha.
So if he's
well,
going to be on Sunday, then use that.
Right. Okay. He's also going to be at a fundraiser just after the screening. I don't know if somebody's handling press for that or not. Maybe so. But would it be okay to combine those two or no? Two separate releases or what?
I would say definitely not two separate releases. I'm not sure if the fundraiser is that interesting to reporters. I mean, I think
okay,
him
gotcha.
Speaking.
Well, Jim Hightower is going to be there.
I'm sorry?
Jim Hightower.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, then, you know, you can mention the fundraiser, too, as in the release. So if you have famous people and politicians, that definitely increases your chances.
Okay.
So I have a question. There's news, and there's, like, we live in a small town, and there's a section called What's Happening, and they'll put in stuff that's coming up. So it doesn't necessarily have to be newsy. So these screenings could go in that other section.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. And you should still try to hit, because then you can still get more people who hear about it happening and will just come to attend it, even if you're not reaching the media in a let's make more awareness around it, you know.
Right, exactly.
So as far as so that person who is just speaking might want to put out a press release 1 week in advance focusing on the Conyers thing, and then just in one sentence, if you can't make it to see Conyers, at least you could still see the screening on the other night. So then people still know that it does happen. You can still get more attendance at your other day than if you didn't even mention it, I would think.
Okay. All right.
So in your press, the reporters may not pick up on it or care, but in your press release, you can put it there, and they can leave it out if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. And for something like that event, you probably do not need to send it out a week prior.
I can't anyway because it's happening Saturday and Sunday.
Right. Yeah. I would send it out as the earliest that you would do it. I think would be Thursday. I think one would only send it out a week early, that much early, if it's going to be a very, you know, a pretty big event that you think there's going to be a lot of interest and you want to be able to hit the press a couple times with potentially different angles of press advisories. But if it's not a situation like that, then send it much closer to the event itself.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I had a question. This is Betty in Vermont, and I'm still not clear on the difference between talking points, taglines, and sound bites. Do they all mean the same thing?
I think they mean slightly different things, but you're right. They're very related. So a headline, you mean like a headline for a press release or
actually,
something?
I didn't even say headline. I know what a headline is because you read those in the paper all the day, all the
right.
time. There's talking points, and
right.
I can kind of get that that's like the 5 second or the 30 second sound, the 30 second quick point that you want to make, right? Okay,
right.
You want to have three clear ones like that. What's a tagline and what's a soundbite?
Oh, a tagline. Oh, sorry, I thought you said a headline.
Oh no, T A G.
Oh, a tagline. Yes, a tagline is more like it's kind of like a sub headline. So you can explain a headline a little bit more. But in terms of talking points versus sound bites, they are pretty related. Talking points, you usually want to be you want to be systematic, right? If you can only say three things, you know, about that, let's say that particular event or that particular campaign, that would cover the most important parts of the campaign. And the sound bites could be very related to that, but the sound bites could be more, you know, maybe more, a little bit more of a personal edge. Maybe there's a snappy analogy that you can make. That would illustrate one of the talking points. Does that make sense?
So the sound bite is the either clever or catchy thing that gets the attention quickly.
Yeah, I think, yes, often is more like that, yes. And I think it's more that, yes, a catchy or clever thing that would illustrate one of the talking points. Because if one of the talking points is, you know, universal publicly financed healthcare, or, you know, let's say Medicare for All saves lives, right? And it does that because, you know, then you may have a soundbite that that will illustrate that point in a sexier way. That's, you know, more catchy.
When you do your little handout to email it to us afterwards, could you just give some like really concrete examples for those of us who don't quite get it?
I will try. Yes.
So, like, if you just, like, if this were an event, these could be three talking points, and these could be examples of specific sound bites that could
yes.
go with.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Are we still on?
All right.
You have a very geographically diverse group of callers today.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Oh, man. Okay. What is the danger, what is the problem with sending out a press release earlier than a few days?
The potential danger is that assignment editors and reporters are very, very busy, and they are bombarded by many, many press releases and also unforeseen events that happen, right, like crimes and various other things that are various things that where people don't send out press releases, but a lot of it is happening, and they cover them. So the potential danger is that they forget about it, right? It's not such a huge, huge thing for them that they're going to remember, you know, like Obama is coming next Thursday. They're not going to forget that. But something very important to us that's not that important to them, if you send it out too early, it's just not, you know, it's just, yeah, they may just forget about it.
Okay. So, for example, we have an event coming up on June 19th in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess with the context, and we have all the details set, could we send something now but then also be sending them information again as we get closer, you know, at the times and days
right.
that you talked about before?
Right. Sure, you can. I mean, I see your point now that you're saying whether it would actively hurt if you send it a couple times, the first time being very early. It probably won't hurt, but they probably will look at it like, you know, if your event is in the middle of June and they're getting something in May, on May 24th or something, it probably won't hurt you, but I don't see how it can help you that early. I mean, it's like 3 weeks early. But also I would recommend, you know, that it's not bad to ask, to call and actually ask them, you know, I have this event coming up, what do you think, you know, is the optimal time for me to send you more information about it? Because a lot of what I share with you has to do with how things work in New York City. And I do take into account, you know, I think in a lot of what I say, I don't know, well, in certain cities it's more like this, in other cities probably a little different. And I have done a little bit of media work in Cleveland, Ohio, when I was working on the election. But I try to take into account that things are different. So it doesn't hurt you to call them and ask. They will probably appreciate it because you are being aware of their needs and what works for them, and they'll tell you. And maybe certain newspapers, they want to get it 10 days in advance. So ask them.
This is Joanne. Could I just add that here in Oregon, a lot of our papers are the smaller papers are weeklies.
Oh, okay. Now weeklies are, of course,
very
yeah.
important to be sure you know what the deadline
right.
is.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, thank you for reminding us, because I'm talking about dailies and when I use these times, you know, these kind of recommended times. Yeah, definitely weeklies are different.
Right. I mean, weeklies may have it that you actually have to have it in 3 weeks early. It's not just a matter of getting it right before the 1 week in advance, but you have to know what day that week
exactly.
is.
Exactly. Exactly. Yep. Just call
yeah, like, for instance, I'll use the example of the May 1 rallies that we've had in Vermont. If you only put it out 2 days in advance, then nobody can actually change their work schedule to come out on a work day when May 1st happens to not be on a weekend. So although we're doing a lot of grassroots organizing.
Right, but that's not press. You're talking about people who show up at the rally.
Well, yeah, but so you do a lot of your other grassroots organizing to get people there.
Oh,
but there are other
yeah.
people that will never have reached that you would like them to have heard about it in advance and had a chance to go. So if somebody were to pick up your story and talk about, like, you know, they did this last year or what, you know, what is this all about? I mean, it seems like in smaller rural communities, if there's like not a lot happening otherwise, they might pick up that story. I would,
right.
you know,
right.
maybe.
Right, I completely agree, and I think that's really when context is key. Like most of the call, the information is really about most situations for single-payer supporters around the country. Now, Vermont is, of course, very different. You guys are in a very different place politically. And single-payer, yep, single-payer is much bigger news. And also, like you said, it's not fighting, you know, news outlets are not fighting the as many crazy news stories as some other papers in big cities are, right? So you're in a very different and in some ways, I would think, privileged place. And you are having a very big rally. So you're right. If you send that stuff out early, because it's a prominent issue, because it's a much smaller place, the news outlets would want to write about it even before the event happened. I totally agree. And in a lot of big cities, that's not going to happen.
Pardon me?
Oh, in a lot of other places, that will not happen because single payer is not a prominent issue and also because they're fighting a lot of issues and they're not going to write about an event that hasn't happened yet.
Right. I think you're talking New York City or San Francisco or somewhere big, it's a very different thing.
Right.
But like our little local newspaper does not cover very much international stuff. I mean, you have to, like, you may have nothing that's international and nothing even national on your front page. It's all local. And Montpelier, you know, is very state-oriented and mostly local. So if you have, they might be interested in coming and interviewing local people who are planning to go to the bus more than they care about what's going to happen actually in Montpelier.
Yes, I completely agree with you. And that's why I think I started with trying to build relationships with reporters and outlets, because when you do that, you'll see that you tailor what you do to what you learn from them, right? And so I could only do a kind of a general call because there are a lot of people from different places on the call, and so we can only kind of share certain types of experiences. But it's all about contacts. You're right.
Here in Oregon, I send press releases out about an event with a lot. It's actually a story. And our papers will publish it word for word.
Oh, wow.
It's like Vermont because they don't do any international news. It's just local stuff. So.
Right, yeah. So that's very good.
Lori?
Yes.
This is Jeff in Philadelphia.
Hi, Jeff.
I have a question about what's your advice for when you do all this work and you have a reporter come and they cover your thing, your event, and then the article they write is horrible. Facts that are wrong and things like that. Because that's happened to us a few times, and we never really know what to do. Because they'll say things like, well, Blue Cross is a single-payer system. Like that's
all right.
The Philadelphia Inquirer.
Yeah.
And so do you suggest writing to the author directly or the editor or, I mean, I don't know. What would you say to do?
Yeah, no, that's a very good question. I think in the ideal world, I think often in the real world, we end up, you know, getting so busy that we don't actually take care of a situation like that. But I think in the ideal world, we should. I think we should write the reporter and, of course, be very, you know, I wouldn't show any anger or frustration, but just be very fact-based and just, you know, thank you for covering the story, like, even though we're kind of, you know, not happy with the coverage, I would still thank them for covering it. And then in a very neutral, in as neutral a tone as possible, point out factual
errors.
Point out things that are not factually correct. I think I would not recommend writing when it's kind of a difference in analysis, then sometimes it's not, although in some situations I think one might even. But I think definitely when there are factually incorrect things, they should be alerted to that, as long as it's done in a way that doesn't burn any bridges.
I think there's a couple things. One is that it depends on if you have a sense that they were ignorant and they screwed up, then you want it to be a very friendly educational interaction.
Exactly.
And if you have a very conservative paper that is always taking an angry stance against anything that helps the 99% or whatever,
right,
then sometimes the letter to the editor saves you more time because you're not going to get anywhere anyway, but you should make sure that those factual errors do get cleared up. In Vermont, we have a rapid response team that tries to keep track of those editorials and write back things to clear up factual errors and that sort of thing.
All right. Mm-hmm.
Also, misquote. They sometimes misquote people.
Right. And you have to figure out, was that intentional or was that just a screw-up?
Right.
Well, thank you, everybody, for staying on such a long call.
Thank you for your time and effort.
That was hugely helpful. Thank you so much.
Thank
I'm
you.
I'm looking forward to the material that you'll send because
privileged.
I can share that with others in our.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Good night.
All right.
Good night.
Thank you, everyone.
Okay.
Bye.
Good night.
Night.